Good morning. It's nice to have an in-person argument. And nice to see all of you. We have busy morning, big morning, to hear five appeals this morning. After we hear the third case, the court will take a brief recess, and then we'll come back and hear the last two cases. Counsel, we're familiar with your cases, the authority cited in your briefs, at least portions of the record. You have limited time this morning, so you should feel free to go straight to the heart of your argument. Be mindful of the clock. When the red light shines, it's time to stop. If you're answering a question from the court, of course, you can finish your answer. If you're worried about rebuttal time, if that applies to you, don't worry. If you're answering a question from us, you're on our time, so you won't be losing any of that. Our first case this morning, we'll hear in person. In the second case, we're going to have attorneys argue here in the courtroom by Zoom, so we'll have a little bit of a delay to make sure that we can see and hear them, and they can see and hear us while IT makes that happen. Our first case is United States versus Maria. Mr. Chen, will you come forward and speak with us? Okay, that's not what my motion notes or my dot notes reflected. So,
it's all right, we're here in person, though.
That's right.
May I proceed?
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. You may have pleased the court. My name is Kristen Novay, and I represent the appellate Nathan Hardwick in this case. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Subject to the court's questions, today I will focus primarily on the trial court's error in excluding vital verse 404B evidence that basically someone else committed this crime apart from Nathan Hardwick. That scheme was that acting alone, Ashim Moria embezzled from total six different companies, carried out deceit by making companies appear profitable, and ultimately funneled benefits to unwitting third parties. Excluding this evidence prevented Mr. Hardwick from completely defending himself at the time. And I ask this court to reverse Mr. Hardwick's convictions on all counts. The trial court erred when he excluded, and I plan to go through each piece of evidence. But first, several defense witnesses who would testify as to the details and the very distinct nature of Ashim Moria's scheme.
District court excluded this evidence as cumulative, right? There were witnesses who testified about the crookedness of this employee, right? And district court didn't want to have basically a mini trial about it. Why was that an abuse of discretion?
If I can back up, I want to answer the court's question.
Sure.
First of all, the trial court never specifically said it was cumulative, although Your Honor is correctly quoting from the transcript. We believe the trial court said twice, we're not going to have a trial about Austin, was the court's wording. But the court initially said one witness would come in, then two. But the defense in our proffer the day before, initially told the trial court the importance of the evidence. The trial court had ruled on the importance of the evidence and agreed it was admissible, and had noted that there were four witnesses from two different companies that the defense wanted to call. The court cut that in half, as well as initially proffered an FBI agent who would refer to the other three schemes, the other place of employment Ashim Moria had worked at the time. And then when it came to court the next day, the trial court said, I've decided it's only one. Initially, she said, or then ultimately saying she would allow two. So, And I think I'll cut straight to this. But I do want to also mention there was also a tape of Austin Berry's own words that was also excluded. This is a tape that defense was offering where she was perpetuating her scheme and continuing to lie to her boss, as well as the third piece of evidence was the final words of Joe Davenport, who was her lover and arguably unwitting beneficiary of other benefits. Mr. Davenport had worked with her at two prior meetings, as well as Morris Harbenschneider. So getting to the court's point, there were some witnesses that were involved, two specifically. So there were two of the five schemes the defense was able to talk about. But the problem is, the court noted, this is a signature scheme. It's coming into evidence not to show her capability that she's able to commit this crime, but the distinct scheme and practice for the way that she does it. That was vitally important to the defense because our big argument was Mr. Hardwick, as well as some of the other partners, were beneficiaries of this scheme. And in fact, there was testimony that the loss was much greater than she actually gained because in theory, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Why isn't two examples enough to show a pattern that you're suggesting?
Thank you, Your Honor. By definition, signature needs more than just one or two. I mean, the Mark Zorro doesn't become the Mark Zorro because it happens one or two times. We had examples of five different times that we needed to get into evidence, as well as this isn't a simple robbery where we're trying to call all five clerks to come in and identify our client, although the government certainly does that. The defense is trying to show how it was possible that Mr. Hardwick was deceived like so many others. And so the two other witnesses that were excluded were imperative. They also knew Oshmiller. They worked closely with Oshmiller. They were totally deceived by her scheme and received things from it. We got one here and we got one there, but it didn't give the complete and the full picture. Some of them had information about Oshmiller blaming someone else, feeling intimidated by someone else, which were all ultimately just lies. And the same lies that she told with respect to Morris Harbin Schneider with Mr. Hardwick.
So there are specific facts that they would have, the other witnesses, the excluded witnesses, would have testified to, because I didn't see in your brief really anything that identifies what those facts would have been that were not brought to the attention of the jury about the scheme, the signature kind of scheme.
Specifically, the FBI agent would have been able to testify to the other three schemes. There was one Sexo with the first one and ProCare. This is the filler. It's important because it shows Oshimori she's getting better. She's evolving. So by the time she hits her fifth scheme, which is more Harbin and Schneider, she knows what she's doing. And the two specific witnesses that were excluded, Vern Johnson was a proffer. That was defendant exhibit 1200, I believe. And the proffer went into more detail. Mr. Johnson knew Oshimori much longer than the original witness we called. He noted, I think, in our proffer that he knew her like a daughter. She was someone that he was incredibly close with. He was a higher up and managed her more. He had more details about exactly what she said and the blames that she put on other people. Tara Bridge was the other person from ProCare that we were not involved. She had some of the information that the original witness had testified to, which in theory they all have the same information. In theory, it's always going to be the same scheme. But she was important because she had more details about what Oshimori had done.
It seems relevant to me that this evidence would be relevant only to the fraud claim, not to the claim of a false statement to the bank. And it seems to me that the evidence is almost overwhelming with respect to the fraud claim, and that that is relevant in deciding whether this is an abuse of discretion and error, is it not?
With respect to Your Honor, I would argue it's something the court can look at. Holmes versus South Carolina, Justice Alito addressed that exact issue. If the court recalls Holmes versus South Carolina had a rule barring the defense from essentially putting up evidence that someone else had done the crime. But the problem was they had said that if it could be barred, and one of the logical reasons for looking at that was that if the evidence was overwhelming. Holmes versus South Carolina specifically said no. That's not the rule, and we're advocating that. That is not a proper logistical manner for determining whether or not a defendant can prove his or her innocence that someone else had committed a crime. This is why it was vital to us.
But in Holmes, was there other evidence that was allowed in that someone else had committed the crime?
No. There was no other evidence that was allowed in.
I didn't think so. So that's a pretty important difference between Holmes and this case, right?
Yes. That is one difference. However, it's different in the sense we were offering it to show the pattern of the scheme. The reason why the court ruled that it was admissible was not to show that she had committed another crime before, but it was to show that she had a pattern.
But the witnesses who were allowed showed her signature with respect to each of those two former employers, right?
Your Honor, they showed a piece of it.
It showed that each of them had been duped by her, right?
It showed that both of them had been duped by her.
And the other witnesses would just be about those two former employers, right?
Not the FBI, but yes, the other two witnesses would go into further detail of the scheme. Mm-hmm. But that's why it's important. And Holmes v. South Carolina, just later said, it's not just defense. It is a complete defense. And what better evidence do we, the defense, have than the full story of exactly what she did, as well as the second error that I enumerated, was Asha Moore's own words. Her own words. The jury didn't even get to hear from her. We couldn't cross-examine her in court as well. So they never got to hear her statements, as well as the final words of Joe Davenport, who worked with her, received benefits, and who said he had no idea that she was stealing from her previous employers. And I'm sorry, Your Honor, I see that my time is up, unless the court has any other questions.
No, you've saved a couple minutes for rebuttals. Thank you.
Thank you.
I now notice that actually Ms. Geddes did write in red letters that you should have gone first. And it's early in the morning. I'm still on Central Time. Mr. Chen.
May it please the court. My name is Jeff Chen, and I represent Ms. Asha Moore. I have three total minutes today, and I'd like to reserve one of those minutes for a while.
So it seems to me, though, to cut to the chase, you've got a pretty clear ex post facto violation here that you've raised. The government concedes it, and therefore you're entitled to a vacator and remand for resentencing. Am I missing anything?
I don't think you're missing anything, Your Honor. I'd like to briefly discuss the proper scope of the proceedings on remand. So, meaning as to her custodial sentence, Ms. Maria, our position is that Ms. Maria should be resentenced specifically under a total offense level 18 and a guidelines range of 27 to 31 months. So I'm just talking about the nature of the vacator, general versus specific.
Well, if it was a mistake to use the new guidelines manual and the district court needs to use the earlier one, what would we say other than that?
I think so. All of the issues underlying Ms. Maria's sentencing range under the earlier guidelines have already been decided by the district court, because those issues are the same issues that the district court decided to expect for 2018 guidelines. So what I mean by this is that all the components of Ms. Maria's sentencing range, other than the substantial financial hardship enhancement, are the same under the 2013 guidelines and the 2018 guidelines. All of them have been ruled on by the district court, and neither side has appealed any of those issues. So for purposes of judicial economy, finality, and fairness, we think that a limited remand is warranted here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chen.
Thank you.
Ms. O'Hara? Is that or Oyada? What?
Ms.
Ojeda. Ojeda, you said?
Ojeda,
Yes.
May it please the court. My name is Rebecca O'Hanna, and I represent the United States in this matter. At counsel table, Russell Phillips is the Assistant United States Attorney who prosecuted the case below. Regarding the 404B issues in this case, the district court did not abuse its discretion or partially limiting the 404B evidence that came to trial. And indeed, the complainant evidence that was excluded all dealt with this theory from Mr. Hardwick was wanted to present at trial about Mrs. Moira and her ability to defraud her employers and lie to her employers. And that's exactly the defense Mr. Hardwick presented to the jury. He did it at opening, he did it in closing, he did it with his reverse 404B witnesses, and he also pointed to that theory with his own testimony, as well as through cross-examination of government witnesses about their trust in Mrs. Moira and their ignorance of the fraud going on at the firm. So Mr. Hardwick wasn't deprived of putting on that defense. The court acted within his authority to manage his trial when it looked at that evidence.
What about the suicide note?
So when it comes to the suicide note, the one thing the defense points to is the pretrial order that did exclude that suicide note. But one thing they didn't mention were the other reasons that it was excluded. And I believe it's document 22-7, where the court excluded the note and states Not only that it was excluded in the note because there was other evidence that Mr. Moira lied, but also that the note did not fit after she got more information. The district court the note did not fall into any of the hearsay exceptions. The court said that she was not convinced that the statement had equivalent circumstantial guarantees of trustworthiness as a document of duration for its making sense of truth. Moreover, the court noted in that order that there were concerns about the authenticity of the note. Neither one of those two points are addressed by the defense in their brief, and they don't raise over errors on the district court to exclude on these cases. Looking at the record, it also shows there were points made about witnesses. The court didn't tell the district court the defense which witnesses to bring. And to be clear, there were four witnesses that the defense initially said they wanted to bring, two from staff and two from ProCare, both from her employers and Mrs. Moira.
What about the agent?
So when it comes to the FBI agent, there's no mention of the FBI agent in the defense briefs, and the court did not look at that. However, that being said, on pages 235 to 38 of the record is where this FBI agent is mentioned. And the only mention of it is to say, we may bring this FBI agent to talk about things that lies that Mr. Moira had done in defrauding his former employers. The defense never presented that agent to testify, and there's no order for the district court to the contrary to review. Also, the defense never complied with the institution requirements, showing that the defense didn't even believe there's probative value in this case. Excuse me, in that witness.
Do you have any quarrel with what Mr. Chen said about scope of remand?
No, Your Honor. We believe it was sufficient for the court to remand with instructions for the court to apply the 2013 guidelines manual based on the findings that have been at trial. Mm-hmm. And the party shall have an opportunity to argue the 3553A factors given the guidelines range.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe there is absolute need for a specific offense level to remain. However, the court's inclined to do that. The court does agree, the government does agree that offense level 18 is correct based on the findings that were determined by the district court during the similar sentencing under the 2013 guidelines.
In other words, you are not thinking about the same two-level increase could have been asserted on the basis of more than 10 victims. And I gather you're not interested in doing that on remand.
No, Your Honor, we didn't argue that at sentencing. And one of the reasons is because the victims that we're focused on were the shareholders at Morrison and the Schneider and the law firm itself. And as a result, we decided not to argue that and we're not going to contest that issue on remand. If there are no further questions, are there any additional questions? And if not, other than the sentencing issues that we can see in our briefs, we ask this court to confirm.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Novak.
With my remaining 2 minutes, I'd like to address two questions that the court posed to my government. One thing that the court had mentioned was the final words of Joe Davenport, the note that left. One of the things the court relied on was the fact that the defense would be able to get this information out, we would be able to cross-examine Joshua Moore.
Well, the government says that one of the bases for excluding that was there was an exception to the hearsay rule that applied. You don't really make an argument in your brief about that, right?
What we argued is that the note would be admissible and that it was important. There were three actual bases by which the court excluded it. One was concerns about the authenticity, although we submitted the value that we would be able to show. The other issue was the admissibility of it. However, under 806, we would argue to go to credibility of the witness. But also there was a corroboration because ultimately Joshua Moore revealed to the FBI that Joe Davenport was not involved. And the third concern that the court made was we have other means by getting this evidence in. That was through cross-examination, which we were not able to do. Importantly, Joe Davenport's note addresses one of the third companies that the defense wasn't even able to get into. That Joshua Moore embezzled from and pulled out the scheme as well. That was an issue for us. And as the court is aware, Corroboration is a fundamental tool for persuasion. And the defense was not that. We were denied a complete defense. A part of the defense, sure. But this is vital evidence that we needed to get in order to prove that we were not the ones that committed this case. And if I may finish my sentence. Therefore, that's why we asked the court to reverse all convictions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. Sounds like we don't have much of a dispute with respect to your remand.
I think that's right. So, unless you have other questions, I'll see the rest of my time.
Okay, thank you so much. That case is submitted, and so we'll have the Zoom presenters for our next argument linked in now.